Good morning. Today's Daf and Ksuvos Chaf Ches. We are now at the last Daf here in the second parak of the Masechta Yirat Hashem. This morning we're going to be finishing the second parak, and our discussion has been primarily, principally throughout this second parak, that of Ne'emanus, that of credibility. Generally speaking, in terms of establishing something that needs to be established, so you need to aid him. But over the course of this parak, we learned that under certain circumstances, Ne'eman al Yidei Atzmo. Excuse me. You're believed even though you are self-reporting. Now the principal vehicle in terms of how this is accomplished is through the operating principle of a pesha asur or pesha yitir, which has been a large part of the second parak. And that if you're saying something which is damning or incriminating on yourself, so what you can do now is that in the very same sentence you can extricate yourself from that position. That's that pesha asur or pesha yitir. We gave at least a half dozen examples here in this parak on that issue. And we're going over other halachas as well, which are similar in nature. Notably a shvuya, someone who was a woman who was taken captive. And now in terms of whether or not she can remain with her husband, we're talking specifically about where she's married to a Kohen, where under circumstances where she is even if she were to be violated, so she would be asura, she'd be prohibited to her husband. So b'shvuya hikilu, so they had a number of kulas regarding a shvuya, and a number of them is that you can even have reporting done by others who are not edim. You can have even one aid, it can even be a woman, but you can't self-report. This is an example where you cannot testify about yourself, that you can't do, but you can have one other person testifying about yourself, and that would be acceptable. So, and that's what we learned in the Mishnah. Yesh edim afilu evedet ve'afilu shivcha ne'emanim. And so what we're going to do right now is we're going to take just one short step backwards. We did this yesterday, but we're going to reset the question. We're going to give three answers to the question. So let's go back. So we are in Chav Zayin Amud Beis, and we're going to start at the two dots. It's about a third of the way down on the daf. So ve'afilu shivcha dida me'emna. So now, anyone could testify about her while she was a shvuya, and it can even be a shivcha. And from the mission, what it sounds like is even afilu shivcha dida, even her mistress can testify about her. And the Gemara says, "But I'm bothered because of a mission on Gittin." Ve'riminu lo tisyachid imo ela api edim ve'afilu api eved ve'afilu api shivcha chutz mishivcha sabin meishali bagas b'shivcha sa. Okay, so the mission on Gittin. The mission on Gittin here is describing what is known as a get yashan. Get yashan is that after a man issues a get to his wife, so they're miyachid, so they seclude with one another. That disqualifies the get midrabanan. Okay, and when we get to the Masechta and Gittin, we'll discuss this in more detail. But anyway, so yichud is no good for ex-husband, ex-wife, so they cannot be miyachid together. Now, what they can do, however, is of course they can have supervision. Now, supervision can come in any form. It can come with a witness. It doesn't have to be a kosher witness. It could be a man. It could be a woman. The only one who is precluded from serving as the supervision is going to be her shivcha. Why? So the Mishnah says, mipnei shelibo gasba, because she is very comfortable with her shivcha. Shivcha will not inhibit her at all. And so therefore, her shivcha cannot be used as any kind of deterrency and cannot be used as a supervisor. So we are now seemingly at an impasse, meaning if in our Mishnah, if she was taken captive and her shivcha was with her, her shivcha can testify on her behalf. And meanwhile, the Mishnah Gittin tells us no, that her shivcha is going to be so sympathetic to her and such a loyalist that the shivcha cannot be used as any kind of supervising body. Oh, okay. So it seems to be that our Mishnah here and the Mishnah over there are at odds with one another. The Gemara is going to give three answers to this question. Number one, Amar Papi Bishvuyi Kilu. So answer number one is that normally the default is that a shivcha cannot be used as a deterrent, as is evident in the Mishnah and Gittin. Happens to be that over here we're talking about the topic of shvuya. The topic of shvuya, hikilu, the chacham or meko by shvuya. So that's answer number one. Answer number two, Rav Papa Amar Habashivcha Dida, Habashivcha Didei. So the Gemara says it depends whose shivcha we're talking about, his shivcha versus her shivcha. So his shivcha, so that can serve as a deterrence. Her shivcha cannot serve as a deterrence again because her shivcha is so loyal to her. So v'shivcha dida lo mehemna hakatani ein adam eid al atzmo. So hashivcha dida mehemna. So the Gemara says, wait one second. In other words, a simple reading of the Mishnah would indicate that her shivcha is fine because the only one who is banned and barred from testifying about her is herself. Meaning, but outside of that, anyone can testify about her, seemingly even her shivcha. So the Gemara says, no. Shivcha sanami katzma, dummy. No. In other words, the way to understand the Mishnah is that when we say herself, it would mean herself, and it would also include her shivcha. Shivcha ki'atzma, it's like her. In other words, again, because her shivcha is so loyal to her, so when we say that she can't testify about herself, we include in that also her shivcha as well. But it comes out to, that is answer number two, a distinction between his shivcha versus her shivcha. Rav Ashi amar hava habishivcha dida. And Rav Ashi says no. Really, the two Mishnayos are talking about her shivcha. So again, let's reset. The Mishnah in Gittin says that anyone and everyone can serve as a deterrent to make sure she does not seclude herself with her ex-husband, with notable exception to her shivcha. So her shivcha is not included. Masha'in Kain, over here in our Mishnah, who can testify about a woman that while she was a shvuya, she was tahora? So anybody including her shivcha. Oh, okay, fine. So once again, that was a problem. We already gave two answers to the question. We're now up to the third answer of the question, Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi says, we're not going to make any chilukim. We're not going to set up that there are different cases or different ukimtas, but rather, so, hava habashivcha didah. In both cases, we're talking about her shivcha. And vishivcha mechse chazya vishaska. Hasam dishtikasa matirasa lo mehemna. Hacha dishtikasa osrasa mehemna. So the Gemara says, look, you just have to look at her silence and how to interpret her silence. So, in other words, basically, when she sees something, when she sees her mistress doing something, so basically, she's going to be quiet, meaning that's going to be her default. Now, over there, shtikasa matirasa. So, lo mehemna. So over there, in other words, what's the shtika going to do? It's going to be matir, meaning, look, she, in other words, over there, meaning in the case of Gittin. So it's the ex-wife and the ex-husband, and they're getting together. And she's supposed to now be the supervisor to make sure that nothing happens. So, in other words, if something were to happen, she'd be quiet. And her silence is going to be matir. And so therefore, lo mehemna. In other words, her default is to be quiet, and her silence is going to result in isser. So therefore, in the case of Gittin, so we're not going to rely on her. However, hachadishtikasa asrasa mehemna. So the, but over here, in other words, what's her silence going to result in? Isser. Because over here, again, her mistress was taken to captivity. She now has to report that nothing happened over there. If, in fact, she defaults to her silence, which is her default, so that just simply means it's going to be isser. Ah. So that's the difference between them. Meaning, since her default is silence, over there, in the case of Gittin, it's only going to hurt. So therefore, it's only going to help her mistress. So therefore, we're going to assume that the silence is not to be interpreted as anything, but over here, if she remains silent, so then her mistress is going to be aser. Ah, that's why over here she's going to be believed. So hashanami asim ashakra. So the Gemara says, well, over here, why aren't we going to be concerned that maybe she'll just simply lie? So talk to lo avde. So the Gemara says, no. In other words, for her to be silent, and that silence is going to result in her not spilling the beans. Okay, that's a concern. But for her to go out of her way to lie, to actively lie, in other words, we're not going to assume she's going to do that. So kihade mari bar yisik v'armilei chana bar yisik asalei achami bechuzai. So the Gemara tells a story that substantiates this. Amalei plogli benichzei da'aba. So he says, no. He says, let's split up dad's estate. Now, in other words, he's introducing himself to the first time as his brother. Hey, you know. I'm your long lost brother, and let's all go divide dad's estate. So now the other brother says, well, that's so funny. Who are you? Right? What? What? Our dad? In other words, I didn't know I had a brother, and what's going on over here? And so obviously now it's more than just, you know, lack of recognition over here. There is obviously litigation. Because now this person is claiming that he is also an heir to the estate and he's entitled to half of the estate. Yeah, okay, or whatever, a portion. So also the comment of Rav Chista Amalei Shapir Kamalach Tichsiv Yaker Yosef Ezachiv Vehim Lo Ikaru. So Malami Shiyatza Below Chasim Azakan Uvabe Chasim Azakan. Now in terms of a lack of recognition, it's totally possible. Remember, the brothers didn't recognize Yosef. Yosef left when he was 17 years of age. Next time they encountered one another, so he was 30, right? Is my math good? Yeah, I think so. So he was 30. So, right? So from 17 to 30, so Yosef grew a beard and they didn't recognize him. Oh. So Amalei Zil Aisi Sahadeh De Achlat. So now you have to bring proofs, meaning you just simply can't come in here and claim that you're a brother. In other words, you have to bring a proof. Amalei Isle Sahadeh Umistafina Mine De Gavra Amahu. So he says, well, look, I would love to bring witnesses and testify on my behalf that I am, in fact, a brother. The problem is that my brother is such a, he's really tough. He's so tough that people are scared of him. No one's going to want to testify about him. He's, quite frankly, he's a bully. So the Amalei Lididei, Zilai Sino Ad, the Lava Chuchahu. So now he flips. So, I'm sorry, which Amara is this? We don't know. In other words, Mari Bar Isaac, Chana Bar Isaac, whatever. So he flips it around. So he talks, he now turns to the bully brother and he says, okay, you're going to have to bring proof that he's not your brother. So Amrlei, Dina Hachi, Amutz Mechaver, Alav Araya. Now, what he argues in his own defense is that, of course, it's ridiculous. Meaning, wait a second, who's extracting money from whom? He's trying to extract money from me. We all know the rule, right? Possession is not 9/10 of the law. Possession is 10/10 of the law. So so over here, I'm the muchzak. He's trying to take money out of me. The burden of proof is on him. It's not on me. What in the world is going on? So he says, look, that's what we're going to do. In other words, you are a bully, meaning the accusation he levied. I happen to know that it's true. I happen to know that people are scared of you. I know that people will not testify against you because they're just so scared of you. And so look, in other words, I am, this is a bit of a bucking of the rules. It's meta-legal. In other words, you're right. In other words, under normal circumstances, the rules are he's trying to extract money from you. The burden of proof is on him. However, because you're such a bully, so I'm going to go now and I'm going to reverse what is normally the halacha. So Hashanami Asim Mishakri. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. In other words, so now you're basically asking people to lie. So Tarti Lo Avdi. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that people won't do that. Meaning for people to remain silent. So, and even though they know information and it happens to be that they're the information that they're silent about would be damning, but people would remain silent. To that degree, I can assume people will do, but for people to outright lie, no, I won't assume that. And so just another example where we see this distinction between being silent and withholding information versus outright lying. So as far as being silent is concerned, that people would do. But we will not suspect, we will not assume that people will just go out right and lie. And if two witnesses are ready to testify now that he's not your brother, he's your brother, he's not your brother, whichever direction we're going to go. So no, I won't assume that people will outright lie. Okay. Now, obviously, if they're caught in a lie, so then that's it. In other words, they're posilatus. But from a default position, I will not assume that people lie. Lema ketanai. Okay. So where are we right now? So we had a stir between the Mishnah and Gittin. The Mishnah here in Ksuvah. So the Mishnah here in Ksuvah says that her shifcha is going to be believed. The Mishnah in Gittin says that her shifcha is not to be believed. And we gave numerous answers in terms of how to deal with this, three answers in total. So the Gemara now is suggesting maybe this is subject to a machlokas tanai. Zu edus ish v'isha tinok v'tinokas avia v'ima v'achiv v'achosa aval lo b'na u'bita lo avda v'shifcha sa. Okay, so. In one braisa, we're talking about Edus Shvuya. So who can testify that she was taken, that we know that she was taken to captivity. Who can testify that while she was in captivity, she was Tahora? So basically everyone, even family members, even close family members, notable exceptions are not her son, not her daughter, and not her Evan, not her Shifcha. But outside of that, anyone else can testify on her behalf, even family members. Again, Bishvuya Hikilu. But here in this first braisa, not the shifcha. V'tang idacha kol ne'eman elam v'nichutz mehem na u'ba'ala. And then in another braisa, anyone can testify about her except for herself and her husband. Meaning, but outside of that, anyone else can testify about herself. And in the second braisa, what it would seem to indicate is even her shifcha. So what do we see right now? It's a machlokas tanaim. Can her shifcha testify? Sorry, let's do that again. Can her shivcha testify about herself, about her mistress? So Braisa number one says no. Braisa number two would seem to indicate yes. So the Gemara says, the Rav Papi, the Rav Ashi, Tanahi. So the Gemara says, according to Rav Papi and according to Rav Ashi, yes, it's in fact the Machlokas Tanaim, because again, they were the ones who do not give Kimta answers. They gave fundamental answers. So therefore, yeah, they're going to have to look at these two Braises, and there's no other recourse. You're right. These two Braises are at odds with one another. However, the Rav Papa, Lema Tanahi, Amalacha Rav Papa, Kitanya Hi, V'misicha Lefi Tuma. Now, according to Rav Papa, no, you could say, what you could suggest over here is that, under normal circumstances, her Shefcha is not going to be believed. But over here, we're talking about Mesiach Lefi Tumo. In other words, and again, now this is going to be, I think, the second time here in this parak that we're talking about this idea of Mesiach Lefi Tumo. And that is that when a person is not testifying, but just simply talking and discussing and giving over information, but not in the context of testimony, just simply, you know, he's just stating facts. And now from his sentences that he puts together, from his information, we're mining the information that we need. That's acceptable. That's what's called Mesiach Lefi Tumo. Gemara gives an example. The Kihad de Chiyasa Rav Dimi Amar Rav Chanan Kartignaa Mishtai Maisa Ba Lefnei Rabbi Shua Ben Levi Amar La Rabbi Shua Ben Levi Mishtai Maisa Ba Lefnei Rabbi Ba Adam Echad Shaya Mesiach Lefi Tumo. Okay, a person was basically just talking. The Amar, and he said, right? I'm just, let me tell you a story. And that is, me and my mother were taken prisoners by non-Jews. And basically, I was in constant supervision of my mother. And when Rebbe heard this, again, this is now a son, but he's not reporting about his mother. He's just simply telling everyone the story. Once Rebbe got that information and he overheard how he was always mindful of his mother and constantly supervising to make sure that his mother was not being violated. So therefore, Rebbe said, good, this is what's called Mesiach Lefi Tumo, and ready now to marry off the mother to a Kohen based on the, not testimony of the son, but the Mesiach Lefi Tumo of the son. Adkan. It gets us up to the Mishnah. We're on the Mishnah on the bottom of Chav Zayin Amud Beis. We continue. Am Rav Zecharia ben Akatzav Hamon Azem. So Rav Zecharia ben Akatzav. Now, happens to be, he lives during Bai Sheni. And at the end of Bai Sheni, he's around the end of Churim Bai Sheni, and he was also a Kohen. Okay, all that is important information for the upcoming Mishnah Hamon Azem. He makes a Shvua. And that is Lozaza Yada Mitoch Yadi Misha Shenichnasu Avdi Kocham L'Yishalayim Va'ad Shiyatzim. So my hand did not leave my wife from the time that the Goyim came into Yerushalayim until they left. In other words, presumably we're talking about the siege that led to the Churban Bayis Sheni. Okay. After that, I can't give you any more details. How long was the siege, and how much time was he in supervision of his wife? Regardless, and by the way, if you're thinking it started from Asar B'Tavis and it went to Tisha B'Av, it's not a terrible thought. It just happens to be that that's Bayis Rishon, and over here we're describing Bayis Sheni. So you know, off by one bias, but anyway, okay, whatever the case is, I don't know the duration, but he was in constant supervision of his wife.
This phrase, my hand did not leave.
Right.
Is it figurative or is it?
It just simply means that he was constantly with her.
Okay.
Okay. In other words, and he was constantly supervising. So, now they said to him, look, it's unfortunate, but that's called testifying about yourself. Meaning you're testifying about your wife, but that's kilu, you're testifying about yourself. We could say this in a couple of ways. One way we could say this is Isha Kagufo, meaning that the couple now is considered one unit, and so therefore any testimony he's giving about his wife is about himself. We could also just simply say, right, the... I found a Rishon speaking like this. That obviously because he has such a vested interest, so it's as if he's testifying about himself. However you want to say it, in other words, you can't do that. Meaning you are now wanting to testify that your wife was not being violated by any of the non-Jews who were in Yerushalayim during the siege. You can't do that. In other words, that's basically testifying about yourself. Ein adamed al atzma. Okay, Tana. The Gemara goes into a Braisa. Af al pi kein. Meaning, so unfortunately now it results in Nisr. Again, this is a tragic conclusion, but this is how, in this particular case, this is how the halacha goes. And that is that now she has the status of being a shvuya. As a shvuya, now she can no longer be with her husband, i.e. they have to get a divorce. Now we're talking about living accommodations after they got a divorce. Now, when it comes to a Cohen and his ex-wife, it gets a little bit dicey. Because as opposed to Yisrael and his ex-wife, what's the worst, and assuming they're neither of them are remarried, what's the worst case scenario? So they try again. They get married again. It happens. And it's fine. Maybe you can even call it a mitzvah. Whatever. But when it comes to a Cohen and his ex-wife, they're not allowed to get married again. So in terms of living accommodation, so they have to be careful now. Meaning because they're not allowed to get remarried again. After the divorce, they're certainly not allowed to have relations again. So in other words, harchakas have to be put in place to make sure that there's distance between them. So yichalei bais bechatzero. So what they did now is they made a house for her in the same chatzer. And kishi yotza yotza barosh bana. And vikishi nechnesus nechnesus besof bana. And making sure that they were never miyachi together. And that means that when she left his house, in other words, they already had children. Okay, I'm not going to get emotional, but it's a tragedy. In other words, they have to get a divorce, and they had children. And now, when she leaves, she makes sure that she leaves first, and then the children leave afterwards. Because if she were the last one to leave, then there would be yichud. Same thing when she goes into her ex-husband's house. The children are going first, therefore there's no yichud. Bye, malasus begrusha came. Okay, so that was the halacha regarding a Kohen and his ex-wife. And again, the ex-wife is just simply as a result of being a shvuya. How about this? How about a Kohen and his ex-wife and just stam, it's grusha. In other words, just a simple case of divorce. So, hasam hu debishvuya kilu. Ava hachalo o demoloshna. Maybe distinctions to be made because when it comes to shvuya, so over there, we don't know if she was violated, meaning she may not be a bona fide zona. So, in other words, it's only a strong suspicion that she's a zona, and therefore maybe over there we could be a little bit more lenient. But over here, when it comes to mamash grusha, so over there, there's no room for leniency. Or maybe no, maybe loshna, maybe it's no different.
Tosh, once you're divorced,
yeah. So now, good. I get to clarify. In the case of Zechariah ben Akatsav, the arrangements were before they got a divorce. Meaning, in other words, they were usher, and before they got the divorce, so they set up residence in the same chatzer. Okay, but you're right. In other words, once they get a divorce, so now we're at this point of the discussion. So Toshma Detanya Megarshis Ishto. So Lo Sinase B'Shchunaso. So now this brisa happens to be talking about not limited to a Kohen, even a Yisrael. In other words, a couple got a divorce and they got remarried. Right? Happens to be it's more significant. She got remarried. In other words, if he gets remarried, okay. In other words, he could still take his ex-wife back. Okay, never mind. It's important, but the point is that they got a divorce. She's now remarried, and so now, again, precautions need to be taken to ensure that she doesn't go back to her ex-husband because now, at this point in time, now that she's remarried, she's now a shesish. She goes back to her ex-husband. That's now a shesish. That's niyuf. That's adultery. So, what are the precautions that are necessary? So she's not allowed to live in the neighborhood. In the neighborhood of her ex-husband. Okay, now neighborhood obviously needs a definition. Okay, it needs a definition. I'll just leave it at that. V'im haya kohen. Now, if it's a Kohen and now he divorces his wife. Now here, in other words, doesn't matter whether she's remarried, not remarried. In other words, they're prohibited to one another. So when it comes to a Kohen, and they're not allowed to live in the same mavui. Im haya kfar katan, zehaya maisa. Now, what if it's a really small village? So this was an episode. V'amru kfar katan nidon kishchuna. And they said that the kfar katan is going to be judged like a shchuna. And so they're not allowed to live in the same community together. It's such a small town that really there, the concern is that they're gonna reunite illegally. So, okay, so an uncomfortable question, but it needs to be asked. And that is that once they get a divorce, And so now we have to make these precautions that there needs to be distance. So who needs to move? She needs to move. He needs to move. Okay, so Tashma. Detanya, he nidches mipana, ve'in he, ven hu, nidche mipaneha. Ve'im haisa chatzar shala, hu nidche mipaneha. Okay, so, default is that she's going to move, not he. We're going to explain that better in just a moment. However, if she owns the house, he's going to move. Okay, so now we need more details over here. The Gemara is going to give. Let's say they both own the home, which is usually the case by husband and wife. So Tashma, he nidches mepanav. So the Gemara says, so let's go right back to that brisa, and now let's examine that brisa. The brisa says he needs to move. So b'may asking an ilam bechatzar shelo pshita. So the Gemara says, well, sorry, she needs. Sorry, the default is she needs to move. Now the Gemara says, contextually, who's owning the home? Well, if he owns the home, of course she needs to move. In other words, she doesn't own it. So pshita ve'ela bechatzar shelo. So v'hatayim ha'isa chatzar shelo hu nidche mipaneha. Well, if she owns the home, we already learned in the brisa that he needs to move. So El alav hi agavna. So it must be that the Bryce is talking about a case where they both own the home, and under the circumstances where they both own the home, and so now somebody's got to move out. She's got to move out. Okay, and again we'll explain that better in just a moment why that is. So, okay, fine. So Dilma b'de agir meger. So the Gemara says, I don't know. Maybe the case of the Bryce is where they're renting. Maybe the same halach wouldn't be true regarding ownership. In other words, you know how the Gemara gets. The Gemara pushes back, meaning it's not mukhrach. We don't have to say that the case of the Bryce is where they both own the home. Okay, so you don't have to say that. My havila. Okay, the Gemara says, good. You don't have to say it. Could we now go over what the halach is? So tashma. So the Gemara goes and cites a halacha based on a pasuk in the Navi. So this is the Navi. So the Navi is now speaking to Chizkiyah Melech, and he says is that you're going to be wandering like a man wanders. Am arav totule degaver kashem deisasa, and it's such a strong klala, meaning a wandering man is worse than a wandering woman. An exiled man is worse than an exiled woman. Okay, man comes into town. And he was forced out of his hometown, and now he's wandering through this town. So who's going to have compassion for him? Unfortunately, the reality is the Navi is describing it. The reality is that not many people. In other words, generally speaking, when it comes to a man and he's wandering, he's not going to get a lot of sympathy. On the other hand, if it's a woman who is now in town and quote unquote exiled, and she's wandering around, so people are going to have sympathy for a woman. So, in other words, when it comes to a woman now who is forced to leave, so she's going to have a softer landing spot when she goes somewhere else. On the other hand, when it comes to a man, so he's going to have a much harder job trying to adopt and introduce himself into a new community. Not that many people are going to be sympathetic to him. And so, therefore, with that in mind, that's why, so the Gemara explains that, when all things are equal, so the woman's going to have to leave, not the man. More things that are going to be inserted as precautions to make sure that when a man divorces his wife, or more probably we're talking about a Kohen over here, that's the way Rashi sets it up, when a Kohen divorces his wife, and now, again, they're not allowed to remarry, and relations at that point in time is strictly forbidden. So now, what are the precautions that are put in place in order so that they're not spending a lot of time together? So let's say there was loans that they are having to settle now, and they need to go to court. So they need to be sending in representatives, what we call attorneys. So Amar Rav Sheshes v'yasa l'kaman ladina lo mizdakekin lehu. Rav Sheshes says, look, Cohen and his grusha are coming to my court. I tell them, get out of my court. In other words, I do not want them spending significant time together. And mind you, by the way, I'm making an obvious point. Mind you that we're talking about in a courtroom, meaning a courtroom is not exactly the most romantic place. But they did have a history together. They were husband and wife historically. And so any extra time that they're spending together is going to be an opportunity for them to reunite. So
even though
though they're divorced, they're not. They're still concerned that they're going to cohabit.
Yeah.
Right.
Correct. Correct. That's exactly the issue.
Because of history, not necessarily because.
100%. In fact, you're going to see that. You're going to see that play out in the Gemara just in a moment. Rav Papa Amar Shemuti Misham. Shemuti Mishamtinalu, Rav Papa says that we're going to put the person in Cherem. And Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua Amar Negude Nami Megadlin on Luhu. You see a Kohen and his ex-wife spending extra time together, you give him Malkus. In other words, and this is really inappropriate behavior. And right, to the best of our ability, in other words, and even with corporal punishment, we're gonna make sure that doesn't happen. Because again, when it comes to Yisrael who has an ex-wife, again, assuming she's not remarried, what's the worst case scenario? They get back together again.
You could take her back.
Yeah. Cohen can't take back his ex-wife.
But they're still forbidden to have relations. They can get remarried, but they can still forbidden to have
relations. Oh, yeah, correct. But in other words, but if they want to have relations, they'll get married again. Okay. In other words, there's a legal manner in which they can do so. But when it comes to Cohen and his ex-wife, that's it. It's permanent. Excellent question. In other words, it's a lav. It's a lav in the Torah.
I got that.
Yeah.
What is the penalty? So if it's malchus, then you give him the penny right before he even does anything.
Right. Right. Okay, good. Fair. I'm Rav Nachman Tana of a Rabasi. So Rav Nachman says we learned the following in a Brisa. Now, Rashi over here, Rashi gives us a little bit of a background, small background, and that is there's a Masechta called Smachos. Okay, it's a small masechta, right? Where there's a group of masechtas called masechtas katanos, right? They're small masechtas, treating not small topics, but just they're smaller masechtas in nature. This one it goes by two names. So one name is called Avar Abasi. That's the way our Gemara describes it. Rashi calls it Smachos. Smachos literally means joy, but it's a euphemism. It means that the opposite of joy. In other words, it's talking about death. Speaking about death, speaking about Avelos, how to treat somebody who died. Okay, in other words, very, very connected to Moed Katan. The third parak of Moed Katan talks a lot about Avelos, but this Masechta is treating this topic in of itself. And Rashi over here, I don't know why. Rashi goes over the first Mishnah of Smachos. Rashi writes the Mishnah Rishona, Gosis Harihu Kechel Chol Dvarav. So somebody is on his way out. It's what's called an halacha goseis, meaning that not only is he terminal, but it's imminent. So as long as he hasn't died yet, he's a chai l'chol dvarav. The halacha treats him like a living person. Okay, and with many ramifications. Anyway, this is a masechta called Smachos. And back to our Gemara, it says the following. Ba'med dvar mamorim. So the kishin eskashim and nesuin. Aval kishin eskashim and erisin. Ifrasa yidei atzma shein libo gaspa. So in Smachos, what we learned together is that all these precautions about a Kohen and his ex-wife, that they can't spend time together, they can't even go to court together, that's only if they were married and they were intimate, meaning they went through both stages of marriage. But if they only went through the first stage of marriage, so then no problem. So then they are considered, in other words, they're exes for sure, meaning they were married, but because they don't have a history of intimacy, so therefore they were not concerned that they're going to be intimate with one another if they're spending time together. Hahu arus varus asodasu kama derava. Gemara tells the following story. So there was a arus and arusa who went through a divorce, and they go in front of Rava, Yasav Rava, the Bramasa, Kamei, Uki Rava Shulcha Ben Tayu. So, and Rava sees, well, I'm giving away the ending of the Gemara. Rava sees now how they are comporting with one another. They're really comfortable with one another, even though they only went through the first stage of marriage. Rava said, enough. Rava basically said, get the attorneys. Meaning, oh, you're not coming here into my courtroom together. So, Amalei Rav Adar Bar Masna, V'Amar Rav Nachman Tana Bava Rabasi. Wait 1 second. You're going against the Braisa. The Braisa says that if the exes only went through the first stage of marriage, not the second stage of marriage, so then there's no problem, and there's no need for precautions. So, Amalei Kachazina Teka Gaisa Ba'adadeh. So Rava says, okay, you're right. You have to know a Braisa. You also have to open your eyes. In other words, see how they're behaving to one another. Meaning, I see how they are so comfortable with one another. Right? Rava suspects that they were Arus and Arusa, and they were intimate with one another. In other words, I see how they behave. So in other words, so Rava basically says you have to balance both what you learned in the Braisa and also Just, you know, opening your eyes and being observant. So, in a second version of the same story, Rava did not tell them to get the attorneys. Rava allowed them to go into the courtroom themselves. Amalei Rav Ada Bar Masna Neka Mar Shlucha Ben Tayu. So Amalei Va'amar Rav Nachman Tana Ba'av Rabasi. So now he was challenged. In other words, don't have them coming to the court together. Have them get their attorneys. So he says, yeah, but I have the brisa. So Amalei. So this is now Rav in the second version. Rav Ada Bar Masna telling Rava, Hani Milehecha Delo Gaisa Ba'adati Ava Hani Ki Chazin Alu De Gaisa Ba'adade. He says, yeah, but in this case over here, now in this second version, he's telling Rava, open your eyes, meaning take a look at that couple. That couple over there is really comfortable with one another. I know they only went through the first stage of marriage, but I have my suspicions. And, in other words, you need to separate the two of them and have their attorneys come into court. Okay. Parenthetical note, attorneys never come up in the Gemara, meaning this is the closest Gemara we're ever going to get to hearing about attorneys. Attorneys is a modern convention. I'm saying historically, meaning back in the good old days, the principals themselves would go to the courtroom, and this idea of having an attorney, I don't know the history, by the way, but in other words, you didn't have an attorney. You just simply went in front of the judges. Okay, anyway,
Rabbi come in and act as your advocate?
I understand that, but in other words, all my observation is that throughout the Gemara, in other words, we'll go through the entirety of Sanhedrin, we're not going to hear a word about attorneys. We're never going to hear about it from the Gemara. Meaning, you want advocacy, that's fine. But I'm just simply pointing out, we
attorneys
never...
meaning a legal...
Right, in other words, representation. Right. Someone to represent you. The Elu Ne'emanim. Okay, we're at the Mishnah. And this is going to be the last Mishnah here in the second paragraph of the Masechta. Elu Ne'emanim Lahid Begodlam Mashira Bekotnam. Oh, so you have a childhood memory. And you're going to go to a courtroom now as an adult and you're going to say, here's what I recall and remember as a child. Okay, now, already at this point in time, you should be skeptical. What? First of all, our memories are unbelievably frail. Number two, you saw it as a child, which at the time you could not testify. And so now you're going to be able to provide this information in the courtroom as evidence. So already, skepticism should be at a high point over here. So if I may, I'm going to give away the upcoming Gemara, and that is every one of these cases is where the issue that you're testifying about is a din derabbanan, not a din d'oraisa, meaning under no circumstance is your childhood memory is going to be sufficient evidence to go into the courtroom to testify about something which is a din d'oraisa. Good. So I spoiled it, meaning that's what the Mishnah, all these cases in the Mishnah, over here is going to have five different scenarios. They're all dinei d'rabbanan. Now, even if it doesn't look like that as we go through the Mishnah, the Gemara is going to make sure that all these cases are dinei d'rabbanan. Okay, number one. Neman Adam Lamar Zek Sav Yadoshal Abba Zek Sav Yadoshal Rebbe Zek Sav Yadoshal Achi. I remember these signatures, meaning as a child, I saw the signatures. That's my father's signature, my Rebbe's signature, my brother's signature. Okay, hold that thought. Number two, Zachra Yisi Beponishiata Behinuma Urosha Parua. I was at the wedding as a child, right? And oh yeah, in other words, she went out. With the Basula garb, right? We discussed this already earlier in the Masechta. There were various menhagim by a Basula when she got married, and she wore something special and unique, a special veil that was worn by a Basula. I remember, I was at a wedding. I was a kid at the time, but I remember the wedding. And yeah, and she wore that. That was number two. Number three. Vishahaya ish ploni yotze mi besa sefer lit balecha b'truma shayacholek imanu ala gorin. I remember as a child, so that kid was taken out of school, and they told him in the mikvah, and they had him eating truma, and in other words, as an adult, I'm sharing with you this childhood memory, and therefore he's a kohen. Number four, makom hazeh beis hapras. Right, this area over here is going to in fact be a beis hapras, meaning that there was a cemetery over here. We lost a cemetery; it was plowed through. The designated area is what's called the Beis HaPras. A person can now testify of a childhood memory that he remembers that this particular parcel is in fact a Beis HaPras. Number five. Ad Kanainu Bind B'Shabbos. This is where Tchum Shabbos officially comes to an end. How do I know that? Because as I remember, as a child, we would walk out of the town and somebody would tell me, my father would tell me, somebody would tell me, oh, that's it. This is a city limits. City limits, I mean that halachically. Meaning you cannot walk beyond Tchum Shabbos. Aval, yeah, okay, fine. So those are five examples. Aval ein adam ne'eman lomar derech hayel aponi b'makom zeh. However, if you want to testify about properties owned by what is presumed to be one person, but actually another person, or I had an easement going through that property, so to testify about that as a childhood memory, that you cannot do. Okay, and what's the distinction? This distinction is actually pretty obvious, and that is, you're now extracting money from one person to another based on a child memory? No way. In other words, to give something certain statuses that you can do. But to be motzi mamon, that you cannot do.
A lot of coordination.
Okay.
A lot of coordination.
Yeah. Amar Avuna Bereder of Yeshua, vihu shiyesh gadol imo. So this idea that I can accept testimony from an adult about a childhood memory, so even as the Mishnah sanctions it, that's only when there's an accompanying witness who's testifying together with him. And that accompanying witness is an adult. So in other words, he can only be acting as a sniff, only as a secondary. But in other words, the Mishnah does not mean that you can principally, primarily take on two of these types of witnesses. Utsricha. Now, the first case of the Mishnah is with the signatures. Remember, three examples of the signatures. In other words, five cases in the Mishnah. First case of the Mishnah, three examples of that first case. I remember my father's, my Rebbe's, and my brother's signature. Tzricha, it's all necessary. Diyash minan aviv, mishum d'shchiyach kabeh aval rabo, lo. So your father, you're always with your father. Meaning, so the fact that you can testify that you recognize your father's signature, that's commonplace. However, your Rebbe, I don't know how many times you see a Rebbe signing. V'iyash minan rabo, mishum d'islei, emosad d'rebe aval aviv. So, lo. But your Rebbe's signature, you can go and counter argue. And that is that you are terrified of your Rebbe. And so therefore, everything he does is going to leave a lasting impression upon you. Right? Your probably your best memories, I'll speak for myself, is, you know, when I was terrified, by the way, meaning in awe of. So when you were in awe of somebody and you were there, everyone's going to remember that. Right? Do this with any Chabadnik. It has to be of a certain age. But ask them about the time they met the Rebbe. Right? And they're all going to have absolutely perfect memories of that event. Okay, good. So that's exactly what the Gemara means over here. So you saw your Rebbe sign. It might not have been as frequent, but they're going to remember. V'iyash min en hanitarte. So if the Mishnah only gave me those two examples. So aviv d'shchicha gabev v'rabo d'yisle emsa. Ava achiv d'leisle lo hava lo ha'im alo. And your brother doesn't have either. In other words, you don't have awe of your brother, and you're not frequently by your brother. So, kamash malan. So the Gemara says that's why the Mishnah had to go over all three examples. Each one presented another chiddush.
How about questions? If they don't allow a child to testify based on his memory when it's fresh, how can you allow someone to testify when he was a child when it's like you said?
It's an old stale memory.
Yeah.
Right. And it might be worse than that. Meaning, I'm being nice right, when I call
exactly.
It old and stale.
Yeah,
correct, correct. So good. So Gemara's going to explain. So the kevan dekiyum shtaros midrabanan and new rabanan bidrabanan. And so now, right to Alan's question, the Gemara now is addressing. What we're going over his childhood memories, allowing him to testify about a signature. So the Gemara over here significantly limits this halacha. And that is to Kiyam Shtar. So Kiyam Shtar, the authentication of a document, meaning the document's already been signed. Mina Torah, the document works. There is a rabbinic requirement called Kiyam Shtar. It happens to be right here in the second parak of Tzuvos. We spent 3 days discussing this idea of Kiyam Shtar. But it's a Din D'Rabbanan. We already established that. So on a Din D'Rabbanan, so the Chachamim said, you know what? We're going to make allowances. We're going to give a dispensation. One of the witnesses testifying about the signatures happens to be an adult who's only remembering it as a child, will allow it. Kiyam Shtar anyway is a Din D'Rabbanan. Okay. So, and by the way, stay tuned because that's going to be obviously the theme of the Gemara, basically taking us to the end. All these cases are dinei derabanan. We're not going to believe somebody on a din daraisa. So zarcha yisib beplanish yatsa beinun rosh parua my time kevin derav noshim basulos nisos. So gila milsabamahu. Okay, his memory that he was at a wedding as a child and she was wearing her basula garb. We're going to remember how do we do that? Again, the Gemara gives the explanation. The explanation is it's not really him. In other words, we have a rove over here. Most women get married as a basula. On top of that, over here, what is he doing now? Is he giving information we're not going to find out through other sources? Meaning, we're just simply, he's, the Gemara description, gilui milsa. You are revealing something that is known. It's a known entity. If we just dug a little deeper, we're going to find out. So over here, that's fine. In other words, basically, it's a rove. Okay, next. Shaya ish plon yosem mi beis hasefer lebo lechal betruma. Vidoma eved kohen hu. So as far as the truma is concerned, so maybe his memory is good, and maybe what he is remembering, however, is not that he is a kohen, but rather he's an eved kohen who's allowed to eat truma. So the Gemara says, "Masayla the Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Dam Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, also la'adam shalom is avdo Torah." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but in other words, once you know Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, this is no longer going to be an option." Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi teaches us that you're not allowed to teach your eved Torah. Okay, in other words, formally in a school. And what my comment over here is just based on the upcoming Gemara. Velova Atanya, the Gemara here goes through a brisa, and that is love amen Rabbo. Oh, she's also Rabbo apotropos. Oh, she niach tefillin bifnei Rabbo. Oh, she karo shosha pesukim bebeisa kinesis. Harizeh lo yetzel acheres. Let's say certain behaviors of the Eved in front of his master that would at least appear like there was emancipation, like there was cheres, right? He's lending like a free man, or the Rebbe makes him. Rebbe over here, meaning the master. The Rebbe makes him a custodian, a trustee over the estate. Alternatively, he's putting on tefillin in front of his Rebbe, which an Eved Kanani is not obligated in the mitzvah of tefillin, or he's reading three psukim in front of his Rebbe. Yeah. Even though it could be interpreted like there was cheirus, no, we don't assume that. So the Gemara says, but meanwhile, what did we just see together? He's reading psukim in front of his master. So the Gemara says, yeah. So the Gemara says, okay, that's informal versus formal. Informal education, meaning if the Eved Kanani is just reading psukim in front of his master, that's fine. In other words, but to put him in school as a formal education, that you cannot do with your Eved Kanani. You can't give him a formal education. So in other words, so now once the memory includes, we were in school together, that by definition now is going to be precluding the Eved Kanani. And now we know we're talking just the only option is that he's a Kohen. And now to the question, again, going back to Alan's question. So over here, what? And now we're going to use that testimony to give him the full status of being a Kohen? So immediately the Gemara says, no. Lit bolecho b'truma truma derabanan. Yeah, we're talking, this testimony is only going to allow him to eat truma, that is truma on a rabbinic level. According to Rashi, according to Tosos, what that means is anything other than grapes and olives. All other fruit, according to Rashi and Tosos, is not chayav in Shuma Daraisa. It's only chayav in Shuma Darabanan. So that's what he would be allowed to eat. The Truma dates, the Truma pomegranates, etc., etc.
It mentions Tzvula, though, in the Mishnah, no?
Huh?
Yeah, it mentions that he remembered that he would tovel.
Yeah.
A Kanani would not be toveling, no?
Kanani has to tovel in order to eat Truma.
He has to.
In other words, to eat truma, you have to be in a state of tahara. Even the Eved Kanani,
okay.
The of a kohen has to tovel. Everybody has to tovel. Good. Shayacholek imanu al hagoren. So the and distribution. In other words, he's testifying to a distribution. Vidom Eved Kohenu. Same question. In other words, maybe it was an Eved Kohen who got a distribution. So tanan kamanda amarin cholkin truma leEved elim ken rabbi imam. A point that we've already litigated earlier in this Masechta or in the previous Masechta, probably Yevamos, if I'm remembering. But either way, and it's something we already litigated, and that is that can an Eved Kohen be there at the distribution center receiving directly a distribution, or can only a Kohen receive a distribution and then subsequently share it with his Eved Kenani. D'tanya, we learned on a bright saying, Cholkin Shumal Eved Elaim Ken Rabbi Yimo Diver Rabbi Yehuda. And in fact, Rabbi Yehuda Shita is that no, Eved Kenani cannot go to a distribution center, even though he's owned by a Kohen, has perfect entitlement to eat Truma, still can't receive a direct distribution, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda says, Yachol Hu, Shomer, Im Kohenani, Tanuli Bishvil Atzmi, Vim Eved Kohenani, Tanuli Bishvil Rabbi. So, and according to Rav Yossi, he can receive a distribution directly. And Mimchamashal Rav Yehuda, Yamalim Mitchum Aliyuchsin, Mimchamashal Rav Yossi, Lo Yamalim Mitchum Aliyuchsin. And then the Gemara just gives us one more line of explanation. The reason why they disagree on whether or not Eved Kohen can receive a direct distribution is because what they also disagree about is whether or not this act of receiving a direct distribution can be used as a litmus test to tell us whether or not he's a Kohen Miyuchas or he's not a Kohen Miyuchas. Anyway. Our Mishnah is following Rav Yehuda Shita, which is why, if the childhood memory tells us that he received a direct distribution, it's because he is a Kohen, not an Eved Kohen. Tanya Amar Rav Elazar Rabbi Yossi, Me'amai lo edet te pamachas, edet te ve'alu Eved l'kuhuna, alpi. So Rav Elazar says that I never testified, meaning I'm always worried about the fact that any testimony I'm giving is subject to a faulty memory, and I never testified. It happened one time that I did. And on that one occasion that I did, it happens to be that it was a total blow up. Right? There was this Eved who ended up becoming a Kohen based on my testimony. And that was the one time I testified. I'm never doing it again. So Halu Salkadacha Hashtam Ma Behemtim Shal Tzadikim. And the Kosh Baruch Hu Mevi Tekal Yadam Tzadikim Atzmam Lokol Shekain. Now the Gemara says now, Kosh Baruch Hu has Hashkacha. And for his Tzadikim, Kosh Baruch Hu has even more Hashkacha. Protects Tzadikim from even erroneous mistakes. And so, that was superfluous. Anyway, okay, fine, whatever. And he protects the tzaddikim. So the animals of a tzaddik is not going to eat tevel. The Gemara over here is talking about a particular donkey, a Pinchas Ben Yair. Anyway, so so you think that Kadosh Baruch Hu would allow this Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi to incorrectly testify? It was a mistake to incorrectly testify about this Eved being a Kohen. So Ella Bikshul Alos Eved Kuna Api. So good. I'm going to get there. So the Gemara immediately corrects. The Gemara says no. In other words, it almost happened, meaning it didn't actually happen, but it almost happened, and that already scared him off. Chazav Ba'atzer de Rabbi Yosef, Azav Asi Ba'atzer de Rabbi Yehuda. And what happened was is that he saw a distribution occurring in the community of Rabbi Yosi. Now remember, in Rabbi Yosi, they allowed both Cohen and Eved Cohen to collect directly. And what he did is he went to Rabbi Yehuda's community and testified. Now remember, in Rabbi Yehuda, distribution is a litmus test. And therefore, in Rabbi Yehuda's community, once you're telling people that he collected, he's a Cohen. He's not an Eved Cohen. That was a mistake that either happened or almost happened. And he never testified again. Anyway, the Tosfos over here, a couple places, more than a couple. Tosfos over here says that little piece of the Gemara about Kadosh Baruch Hu is protective over its tzaddikim and won't allow him to err. So Tosfos says take that out of our Gemara. It doesn't belong in our Gemara. In other words, the afforded protection for tzaddikim is only so that they won't eat non-kosher. Meaning it's only that extra hashkacha for tzaddikim is only for achilas iser, but for no other iserim. Okay, and so therefore, this doesn't belong over here. Okay,
it does belong because with his testimony that he's a Korean,
he would
be eating tumor.
I hear that. I thought of it. I like it. Okay, but Tosus didn't agree, but I like that. Okay, v'sha'am makom azeh beis aprasu. My time beis aprasu rabbanan. I'm Rav Yehuda Mishmol Menafei Chadam beis aprasu. Holech for Rav Yehuda Bar Ami Mishmei. The Rav Yehuda Amar beis aprasu nidash tahor. So so if he has a childhood memory testifying about this particular piece of land, that it is a Beis HaPras, he is to be believed. Why? The whole institution, Beis HaPras, is a Din D'Rabbanan. A number of leniencies that show us it's a Din D'Rabbanan. Bring in your leaf blower. I know I say this every time. It's fine. It amuses me. So bring in your leaf blower, right? In other words, you're walking through a Beis HaPras. Now, a Beis HaPras is where there was a cemetery that was plowed over. So now... there's no longer any human remains that would bring about tumas ohel, meaning that's out of the question. The only issue now are bone chips. Okay, I know it's a bit graphic, but the only issue are bone chips, and you only become tummy if you touch the bone chips. So what you'll do is you'll bring in your leaf blower, and as you're walking through, you just simply you point in front of you, and you clear a pathway in front of you. Okay, that's one leniency. A second leniency is that, let's say, is through the base of process like this really worn out pathway. Also, avail yourself now to the leniency, because as Rashi describes over here, by the time now all these people have stepped over, there's no bone chip that's big enough to make you tummy, which quite frankly is somewhat amazing, meaning the bone chip doesn't have to be that big. It only has to be the size of a seora. That's a barley bean. Okay. Anyway, but the assurances are that at this point in time, there's no bone chip that large. Okay. So what do you see over here? You have these leniencies. You know why there are leniencies? Because the whole institution, based on the process, is Din D'Rabbanan. My Tami Efshaletzim Kitzar, Shalom Nidish Beregel. So funny, I give Rashi credit, it's the Gemara. Okay, sorry. But the small mistake, I can handle that. So anyway, so good. So again, it's the theme of today, meaning these childhood memories that a person's testifying about as an adult, all of them are only in Dine D'Rabbanan, not Dine D'Araisa. The Adkan, I know Bayim B'Shabbos Kitzar, Tchumen D'Rabbanan. The Gemara immediately dispenses with the next case of the Mishnah. You're testifying about Tchum Shabbos? Yeah. Tchum Shabbos is a Din D'Rabbanan, not a Din D'Araisa. Remember, Machlokis, Rabbi Akiva, you do remember. Good. So the Rabbi Akiva's hold is of the position that Tchum Shabbos is D'Araisa? Good, but he's a Das Yachid. He's a Shitas Yachid on this issue. Ein neman lamar derech haya laploni b'makam hazeh, ma'im eno mispad, hayan laploni b'makam hazeh, ma'itam ha'afukim emon olam afkinan. Okay, so I said this in the Mishnah, but here's where I learned it from. I learned it from the Gemara. The Gemara says is that childhood memories that are going to take money out of a person's hands, no way. Afuke mamona lo mafkinan. That memory cannot be servicing taking money out of one person's hand and give it to another person. Tan rabbanan nemanatina glamer kach amarli abba mishpachazu tarim mishpachazu tameya. So we have a brisa. Brisa is on the same theme. A person is believed. So a child is believed that that my father told me this family is tahor tamei. Now the Gemara says those terms tahor tamei asaka dalcha ela mishpachazu kshir mishpachazu psula. So the Gemara goes immediately corrects. In other words, what we really meant was kshira and psula. Usha achana b'tzasa shal bas ploni laploni, and we ate by the kitzatsa. Now you don't know what the kitzatsa is. I'm not saying it because I'm sure you don't know, but if I had a bet, you don't know what a kitzatza is. It's okay. Before today's daf, I didn't know what a kitzatza was. You wait, by the way. Today's daf is going to conclude with a description of the kitzatza. It's going to be hard to forget. It's going to be a memorable moment, and that's how we're going to end the daf. So I'm teasing the last minute of today's daf, and we're not that far away from it. So everyone, stay tuned. And I was a delivery boy delivering chala and matanas to a kohen. But in other words, but it had to be that I was the delivery boy. However, this works as recalling your childhood memories. But if you're calling a memory prior to your conversion, that is not admissible. Or same thing. While you were an Eved Kanani and now you were Mishtachra and now you're a full-fledged Jew, so any of your memories when you were an Eved Kanani is not admissible. This Braisa says the same thing that we learned in our Mishnah. Your childhood memory cannot extract money from one person to another. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Amar Nemanim. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says that they are going to be believed. Now, Rav Yochanan ben Broka was modifying which part of the Braisa? Exactly the Gemara's question. Rav Yochanan ben Broka, ahaya ilema seif afuke mamonuhu. It can't be Rav Yochanan ben Broka's modifying the last statement of the Braisa. Meaning, no one's going to suggest, no one's going to argue that you can take money from one person and give it to another based on a childhood memory. That's no. That's just not tenable. Ella Aresha, Vikulamim Hayu, Vikulchaman, his guy, Rav Shtacher, Einamanim, Rav Yochanan ben Broka, Amar Nemanim. So what Rav Yochanan ben Broka is arguing on is the pre-conversion memories. So you have memories, accounts of what happened before you converted. The Tanakhama says it's inadmissible. Rav Yochanan ben Broka says admissible. Now, b'makemufagi Tanakhama sever came into avikochavimu la havadayik. Rav Yochanan ben Broka sever came into daita leaguria medek hu dayik. And what they're arguing about is the following. Tanakhama says, look, he wasn't Jewish. In other words, and he had no sensitivities to these issues. And if you're not sensitive to it, you're just not paying attention. And then what Rav Yochanan ben Broka will argue is he's been thinking about converting. Okay, having experienced, by the way, a couple of converts in my life, I now retrospectively know that they were thinking about it for years. In other words, I'm not taking a position. Who's right? Obviously, I'm not taking a position. I don't have a say in the matter. But in other words, I'm just my own personal anecdotes. I know they've been thinking about it for years, and that's right. And they're right. It's a serious decision. And Rav Yochanan ben Broka says, yeah. And because they were thinking about it, so even while they were non-Jews, they were still sensitive to these issues. My kitzatza. Okay, here we go. So, a childhood memory of that I was there at the kitzatza. Okay, what is that? So, Tanu Rabbanan. Everyone get ready. This is wild. Ketzad kitzatza. Echem enachem shenasi isha sheno again slow. So one of our brothers, okay, I'm not speaking personally. So one of our brothers married somebody who was wildly inappropriate, right? We all knew it, right? All the brothers got together. Okay, I know, you shouldn't be speaking like this, but all the brothers got together and they said, did you see who he's marrying? Like wildly inappropriate. Okay, halachically inappropriate, whatever, just inappropriate. So, bayin b'nei b'shpacha u'mevin chavis malea peros. And so what they would do is the following, a public display of displeasure. Like this is, protest. Right, a protest. And we're going to go into the middle of the street. I know that. We're going to go into the middle of the street with a barrel of fruit, a big barrel of fruit, and we're going to break the barrel. So, v'shover masob emsa rechava, v'omrim. And that's not enough. In other words, and announcements. And that is, achino beis Yisrael shamu, achino ploni nasa isha, she'eino hogenes lo. So, people of our city, listen carefully. Our brother married somebody who was wildly inappropriate. So obviously they're going to have children, and those children are also going to be improper. Again, what exactly the nature of the illicit union is, we don't get a good description. Okay, I'll assume, I don't know if I'm right, that it's a halachic incompatibility. I'm assuming that's the case. Again, I'm not sure if I'm right about that. So bo v'chulachem dugmaladaros shelo yisarev zara bizarenu, and this should be a lesson for all of you, meaning that you shouldn't have our children getting together again. In other words, a public protest of who their brother married. Vizui kitzatza, and that's it. In other words, and that is the kitzatza protest. Shatinuk nem alayid alav, and the child now is going to tell you that I remember that. I have a good feeling that if any one of us saw it, we'd also probably have a good memory. Hajan Lachi Shashanas Armala. And Adkan, that takes us to the end of the second paragraph of the Masechta. Everyone, I appreciate your patience. We went just a little bit long today, but we did finish the second paragraph. Let's quickly recap our daf today. Okay, we started off on Chav Zayin Amud Beis there, the discrepancy between the Mishnah Gittin and our Mishnah here in Ksuvos regarding the testimony of a woman's very own Shivcha. Can she testify about her mistress? Mishnah Gittin says no. Our Mishnah would indicate yes. And how to resolve that? Three different solutions to that discrepancy. Next, Rav Zecharia ben Akatsav, who was a Kohen living at the end of Bayesheni, during the siege, lots of non-Jews came in, and he's trying to testify that his wife is the Tahara, and that is considered self-testimony, which is inadmissible. And here is opposite, trying to say that his wife was a Tahara. Unfortunately, she has the status of being a shvuya, and so in the Gemara we discussed the fallout, and that they are prohibited to one another. They have to separate. Ultimately, they're going to have to divorce. How exactly do they navigate? So we saw a little bit about that in our Gemara. Generally speaking, in delicate discussion, today's daf, ex-husband, ex-wife. So how do they live together? I don't mean in the same house. I mean in the same community. And over here, this is obviously sensitive. It's halacha lamaisa. Just because we learned a couple of lines of Gemara today means that you don't know the halacha. It means that you go to a rav, and you ask the rav, you know what to do. The halachas are detailed in terms of how they what they do to live together. Obviously, there are a lot of considerations, children, etc. I'm just an obvious point, but that is just because we learned the Gemara does not mean we know the halacha. Next. Childhood memories, right? The last Mishnah here in the second paragraph of Ksuva says that you have a childhood memory as an adult now years later. So is that going to be admissible? Oddly enough, the Mishnah says five different occasions where yes, it's absolutely admissible. And then what we did in the rest of today's daf in the Gemara is we lined up each one of those five cases. They're all dinei derabanan, not dinei deoraisa. Your childhood memory is not admissible to report on a din Torah, only on a din derabanan, and seemingly only the ones that are enumerated in our Mishnah. That part I'm not sure about. Meaning, is our Mishnah just giving examples of dinei derabanan, or is the Mishnah only speaking to these particular examples? I'm not sure. I can guess. No point in guessing. Other brises that we discussed on the bottom of Chav Ches Amud Beis in terms of where else childhood memories would work. And that would be by the Ketzatza. And we ended off our perek describing a really unusual practice as a public protest that one of our brothers married somebody who was wildly inappropriate. Okay, and you can testify about that even as an adult.
What's the protest looking to accomplish, though? Is it the